The question that I want every practitioner who's listening to this to ask themselves, and that I want you to wrestle with as you listen to this, is if a patient comes to you and you work with them for, let's say, an episode of care around whatever issue they have, so you work with them for, say, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, what does that person's health look like in 5 years? Has their time with you changed the trajectory of their health for a lifetime? Because if not, like, I really want everyone to just be like, that's got to be the standard that we hold ourselves to. Because if we're not doing that, we're almost just like, you know, a poor man's version of allopathic medicine. We're doing the same thinking, but just with inferior tools.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Reinvent Health podcast. Here we get to chat to some of the world's most interesting and influential people about everything to do with physical, mental, and spiritual well-being. If you want to make healthy changes and live a better life, you are in the right place. Please don't forget to rate, leave a review, and share with everyone who wants to live their best life. And now your host, Nikki Robertson.
This conversation is for all the healthcare providers out there who are passionate about taking patient care to another level. In this episode of the Reinvent Health podcast, I had the wonderful opportunity to chat with James Maskell, founder and CEO of the Functional Forum, the world's largest integrative medicine conference. James is the author of two books, The Evolution of Medicine and The Community Cure. It is James's mission to reinvent the healthcare of the future for both patient and the provider. There's more about James, the Functional Forum, and the Heal community in the show notes.
The journey actually starts like right at the beginning, where I'm like the only kid in school whose mother has insisted that she be contacted before I'm given antibiotics. And I see a chiropractor and I see a homeopath, and I really have like a very different medical infrastructure for my support than anyone else. I grew up, the first 5 years I lived in South Africa, and then I pretty much full-time moved to England when I was 5 years old. And yeah, I just remember being at school and realizing that I was sort of like the odd one out in that way, and that my mum had I remember actually going into the nurse's room at school and seeing like James Maskell must call before antibiotics. And it wasn't like there was any other kid, it was just me. And I didn't realize, you know, what was really going on. I knew that I went to a chiropractor, and I knew that I went to this like holistic dentist when my teeth were getting done. So I didn't really kind of understand it, but I knew straight away then that I was doing something different. And then, I kind of had a rebellious phase. Like I'd grown up in community. So I had lived in community in South Africa and England. My parents were part of like a spiritual organization, and inside that organization was definitely a lot of like front-running people on the natural health movement. There were a lot of chiropractors in the movement. And, I had a kind of rebellious phase when I was like 11, 12, 13 through to like 18, where I thought my parents were insane and the rest of the world had it right.
Yeah.
I got a degree in economics, and from there took a job at an investment bank. I got a really good job straight out of university. I had focused on some health economics topics at university. And then I sort of had a moment of clarity where I was like, I'm not sure if I'm this guy. I'm not sure if I'm the investment banker guy. And there was something interesting and unique about my childhood that I just wanted to kind of explore a little bit further. And so that led me in 2005, age 24, to quit my banking job, move to Georgia, America, and start to work in natural health.
So you began as a medical rep, from what I picked up from one of your podcasts. And then what was the angle that, I mean, functional medicine isn't, the term functional medicine is fairly new. How are you introduced to more, even if you came from a very much more integrative way of thinking, who did you meet? How did you find out about functional medicine? And, your angle is a business. It's getting the practitioners, especially practitioners who are dissatisfied with the way that the medical world is functioning at the moment is getting them to understand that there's a new way of doing medicine. What drove that part for you?
Yeah, so, you know, in those intervening years, I'd done some therapies myself and had sort of got understood some of it. I can remember in 2001, when I was 20, I can remember doing like a special kind of test and coming up that I had like insecticide, high levels of insecticide or herbicide. And I think it was just because I played cricket. Like I was a cricket monster from age 11 to age 25. Like I played cricket 4 days a week every summer. I was just, you know, my school played a ton of cricket and I played for a club. And I guess, you know, licking your fingers and putting it on the ball and rubbing it on yourself over and over again was not that healthy. So I knew that, like, okay, they were able to identify something that was going on in my body that the doctor never would have known of. So just, it was kind of building credibility in my mind.
Yeah.
Then I moved to America to actually, you know, the promise was to work in natural health at this new clinic that was getting started. And the vision for the clinic was to be like the future of primary care. And it was natural health delivered in a spa environment. It was in Georgia and I moved there. And for a year and a half, I worked in a clinic. So I actually saw patients getting better. I saw people reversing their chronic illness. I saw in, you know, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, people, you know, getting off medication, in some cases, like going from a wheelchair to be able to walk, you know, but in many cases, just like visibly transforming, like becoming visibly different people in a period of time by like getting involved with the naturopathic doctor who worked at the clinic and doing the protocols and so forth. So I was learning about that then, and I was working with the naturopathic doctor. Then a year and a half into that, I kind of realized, okay, I'd learned enough there. And I took a job with one of the supplement companies that the doctor in the clinic used. And there's a sort of a niche of supplement companies that are only used in, you know, by doctors. You can't buy them in a store. They're prescribed by doctors. And so then my territory was Virginia to Maine, which is like the northeast of America. And I got my girlfriend then, now my wife, and we went on a 5-month road trip to meet all the customers in that area. And, you know, what happened then was, I think over the next 5 years, just really building the deepest, broadest understanding of all aspects of natural medicine, right? Mm-hmm. Homeopaths, chiropractors, you know, Chinese medicine, osteopaths, like what are all these things doing? What are all these practitioners doing? What language do they speak? What kind of therapies do they use? How do they work together in teams? How is it paid for? How do they interact with insurance? Everything. You know, a sales rep gets a broader, deeper understanding of all of that than anyone, because you're, even if you're a doctor in that space, you only have your own experience and maybe a few others that you know along the way. But I was getting the deepest, broadest experience because I was meeting all of these different types of practitioners all the time. And at that point, I had come across functional medicine, but I didn't really understand what it was. And then in that 5 years, I started going to this conference called the Integrated Health Symposium, which was the biggest sort of professional natural medicine conference in New York.
Yeah.
And that's where I heard, for the first time, I heard Jeff Bland speak. Yeah. And what I realized was straight away is that functional medicine was sort of sciencey enough to get mainstream MDs to convert across, which the other natural medicine stuff like herbology, homeopathy, you know, Chinese medicine, it was too big a leap, right, from conventional medicine. And very, very few doctors made the switch across. And there wasn't really a bridge in the middle where there was like holism 101, where you could understand the body as an integrated system. And, you know, you could never get a doctor to understand homeopathy or Chinese medicine without that bridge. But once those doctors came across that bridge, then they were open to these other modalities, but they had to come past the bridge. So that was my first introduction to functional medicine. And then the big thing happened in 2012, where I was sitting at that same conference again, and Christy Hughes gave a talk. And it was given by the Institute of Functional Medicine. And that's when I realized that the functional medicine operating system, the sort of core matrix and timeline and sort of onboarding structure that they used, was actually a way that diverse practitioner teams could collaborate over patient care. And I realized that actually that was the biggest missing piece, because ultimately, like if you have chronic pain, do you need a homeopath? Do you need a chiropractor? Do you need a Chinese medicine doctor? Do you need an acupuncturist? Do you need clinical nutrition? you know, how do you know which patient needs what?
Yeah.
And I've never seen a way for practitioners to, you know, come together in a way that allows them to have a common language and allows all of those diverse practitioners to work in a team together. There needs to be a sort of a unifying structure. And that's when I realized, like, okay, functional medicine had the potential to be that.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. So in your experience, if we had to take, for example, the USA, the UK, South Africa, having worked with doctors, or you are in the sphere of taking normal practices and helping doctors become more collaborative, because we've learned over the last couple of years, specifically, that, you know, collaborative medicine, or understanding not only the patient as a whole, but if we can all share information, that patient has a better chance at long-term permanent health with the minimal amount of pharmaceutical intervention possible. So from an uptake point of view, who would you say is more receptive at the moment? Or are we all in the same boat, whether you're looking at Europe or Africa or America? Is it still really tough to change that mindset of the average physician who isn't already asking these questions, who hasn't hit a wall over and over with their patients and gone, there's got to be a better way?
Yeah, well, look, in all systems, like, mainstream doctors are sort of hedged into some sort of system, right? At least in America, there's like a history of private practice where there's a history of doctors kind of doing their own thing. And so that means, I think one of the big reasons why that the movement in America is further ahead is because it wasn't that out of the historical norms for doctors to, like, start their own new practice, doing something completely different.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and just not have to, like, engage with the rest of the system. In the UK, where I grew up, like, all doctors are trained to be inside the NHS, and that's it. And only in the last 5 years have you seen sort of the rise of some doctors doing totally different things, like being in private practice for cash, or, yeah, you know, starting technology businesses, or, you know, going outside of, like, the historical norms. So I think it's one thing to, like, realize that the clinical operating system is not ideal. It's another thing to actually, like, do something different day to day. So, you know, I think that was a big thing. And then also, yeah, there's just a lot longer history in America. So, you know, the first, you know, like, Standard Process, which was the first natural supplement company only sold through doctors, you know, started in America in the 1930s. So there was, you know, historical precedent for natural medicine being delivered. There's also, you know, there's just a lot more foundations in America that make it more likely to have started and grown there. And so, yeah, and then you start to see that in the last 10 years anyway, you know, those doctors that go outside of the standard of care are not being, like, brought before their you know, their medical board for practicing, yes, you know, outside of the standard of care. And data is starting to emerge that maybe this is actually a better way of treating chronic disease. And so, yeah, so that was all happening. And then, you know, around the same time, like, I'd started my first business, which was consulting doctors on how to make the transition to functional medicine, like, not the clinical transition, but the practical transition in terms of education, in terms of technology, in terms of structure. And I started going to conferences, now speaking at conferences, really about, you know, my thoughts on, you know, how to, if you're going to shift to, like, sort of an empowerment-based practice, you know, how should you do that? And particularly how you should use the internet. And because that was sort of happening simultaneously, is that you could see the writing on the wall. And, you know, if you want to be in the education game, which most practitioners were, right, how do you create, you know, automated and scalable education systems to bring patients in and educate them? So I had been doing that for a few years, and I had a business. I got to speak in front of doctors and meet a lot of people by speaking at conferences. And then I'd actually been out to LA, and I'd seen that there was, like, a functional medicine practitioner meetup in LA hosted by Dr. Hyla Kass. I'd gone to that in, like, 2011. And eventually, you know, having still been a sales rep and still, you know, working with doctors in the Northeast, I was like, we're going to start a functional medicine meetup for doctors in New York. And that was sort of the beginning. And at that point, I had already done, like, hundreds and hundreds of practitioner events, small little events for 10, 20 practitioners, you know, in different little places all across my territory. So by the time the functional forum hit and we did the first event, you know, it was no accident that it was a hit straight away, because like it had just been like learned in, you know, in small little yoga studios all over my territory with, you know, 10, 15 doctors together. Yeah. And so, you know, when we did the first show, we worked, you know, it was a hit, and I had like, just right from the first moment, it was the right thing at the right time. And the technology had just arrived where streaming was now possible. And, you know, it just grew really, really rapidly in 2014.
What do you think is the biggest barrier for many doctors? Is it a fear of losing their authority? Is it a fear of, you know, like you said, being bought before the Health Professionals Council in South Africa? Or is it a fear of, you know, let me put it this way. Being in clinical nutrition, I have to work with a doctor, and it's been historically difficult for me to find someone who I can freely share my opinion with. With the exception of, funnily enough, endocrinologists. There's so many endocrinologists in SA who get it. They understand, well, the guys that I work with anyway, they understand that there's more to a human being than just a diagnosis. And, you know, over the years, I found a very small group of doctors who are, I suppose, confident enough in themselves to really talk about solutions. So what in your experience over the years has, you know, what puts the handbrake on for so many of these practitioners?
There are significant points of friction all the way through the system, right? There's like educational, well, there's friction that's specific to doctors. So there's like the sunk costs of their whole degree, where they've spent years to learn one operating system of medicine and, you know, can't really think beyond that. There's this, you know, there's the reputational risk. There's, you know, all these things with like shifting your practice and sort of like what it would take to actually onboard this information and change your practice accordingly, because ultimately like doing a diagnose and prescribe business is pretty easy. And the system's already bought for it. Like if you prescribe a drug, there's pharmacy and pharmacists and there's systems to like deliver that care out. Once you start going into delivering clinical nutrition plans and wanting patients to change, there's no real like execution system for that. So, you know, there's the doctor system. Then on the systemic friction, right? So there's like all of what I just mentioned, but like in America, okay, what insurance will pay for and, you know, how the insurance guidelines work and how long your appointments can be. And there's all that kind of systemic friction. And then there's also patient friction too. It's like, you know, will the patients actually do what you tell them to do? And that's a huge point of friction as well. So, you know, the reason it's taken so long, even though it's so obvious, is because all of this friction just like sits in the way. And ultimately, I think if there's one thing that you could say that we've been trying to do with the evolution of medicine for 8 years, and now with the other businesses that I've started, it's all about reducing the friction to get people healthy. And some of it's to do with like changing the way that medicine is practiced, some of which is, you know, to do with the way that things are paid for, some of which is being to like, you know, just the ease. Like when we started the Functional Forum in 2014, there was no free content for doctors online about functional medicine. The only way that you could go in and do any training was you had to spend $5,000 and go to a conference for 5 days.
Yeah.
So that's huge friction there too. So ultimately, you know, everything that we've done has been to try and reduce that friction, to try and make it easier for doctors, not just to learn about it, but then to go out and practice it. And then, you know, 3 years into it, I wrote this book called The Evolution of Medicine. Sure. And that book was really about sort of an emerging way to break free of the system as doctors and practice a new way, which we called the functional micro practice. And that was practicing functional medicine in a really low overhead environment.
Yeah.
And it's really because for the first time it was possible to, you know, not have to have such a massive office because you could do telemedicine, not have to stock all the supplements in your office because you could e-prescribe, you know, not have to have a huge, you know, phlebotomy section because you could have a mobile phlebotomist. And so like that shift in energy or that shift in technological possibility created a way for doctors to sort of leave the system and start their own business for a budget of $20,000 and not $200,000, which it would have cost before to like get your own space and take out a rent and, you know, hope that people show up.
Yeah. And I also guess, you know, traditional medical training doesn't teach people to think business. It teaches you to fix somebody who's broken. And, you know, this is just simply not the way the world's going. Because, look, I can't really speak specifics, but I would hazard a guess that 30% of a practice is actually stitching somebody up or giving them something for a chronic infection. And the rest is, as we've seen, comes down to prevention. And this is simply what doctors, firstly, are not trained in prevention. Most doctors, unless they go out looking for it, so they go and get additional training in functional medicine. So they're not interested in stopping them from getting sick in the first place. And they're not taught to think business strategy. They're not taught to think how they can low overheads. It's taken a bit of time, but in SA, we're starting to see a lot more practitioners embracing this because charging by the hour is, it's just not cost effective for anybody anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, South Africa has its own sort of like points of friction, you know, again, to do with like what percentage of the population can afford to pay cash for medicine, you know, and how can this, these kind of ideas make it through to a much bigger population. And that's really what I've spent the last 3 years looking at, because, you know, if I look back at in 2018 or 2017, you know, I realized that I had spent like a decade one way or another trying to facilitate this shift, which is trying to make it easy for doctors to leave conventional medicine, learn the operating system of holistic care, you know, create low-cost clinics, so low-overhead clinics, and then, you know, build from there whatever their vision is, right? You want to have a franchise, you want to have a big clinic, you want to stay having a small clinic, you want to become a celebrity and write a book. Like, all of those opportunities are available once you have this sort of core technological framework in your practice and you can sort of iterate from there. And we've seen all kinds of practitioners go in all kinds of directions with that core foundation. We've taken, you know, over 1,000 doctors through our practice accelerator that started in 2016 too, which is essentially giving doctors and health entrepreneurs like a basic digital infrastructure to be able to, you know, build whatever their vision was for their life and for their clinic. And then I would say, you know, in the last 5 years, starting to really think a little bit more globally, I guess, about, or like a little bit bigger about what could this, you know, this evolution become? Like, how could we really transform the healthcare system and really create structures where this wasn't just like the last ditch thing that you went to when all the other drug therapies hadn't worked, which is typically where people find themselves if they're in this world, right? You go to your doctor, you go to a primary care doctor, they try some stuff. Then you go to, they recommend you to specialty care, they try some stuff. Then it's another specialist and they try some stuff and another specialist. And by the time you get to a functional medicine person or clinical nutrition, typically you've exhausted all those possibilities. Yep. You put a lot of like unneeded stress on the body through polypharmacy and through just like not being listened to and kind of probably in many cases knowing that you're not getting to the root cause of the issue. And that's one of the big reliefs that patients feel when they come into functional medicine and are listened to and, you know, take a deep history and really get into like, okay, what could have been causing this and do the right testing to find out what's going on. You know, without all of that, it's a very frustrating experience for the patient to just be like, you know, in their mind, they were like healthy, 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 healthy lupus. And it didn't quite work like that, but it's just like no one ever took the time to really show them that, you know, that disease was building in the background and it was a cause of a number of different factors. And the reason why it went unnoticed is because the doctor's not trained in function. Mm-hmm. They're just trained in, you know, in symptoms.
Yes.
And if the symptoms didn't occur, you know, then it wasn't a trigger for them to say, oh, this is almost lupus. This is pre-diabetes. This is pre-heart disease. This is pre-autoimmune disease. And we know in functional medicine that, you know, you can see where people are on the pre-spectrum and you can take them back along that spectrum if you are able to catch it early. So, you know, everything that I've been doing for the last few years is really focused on systemic transformation. So I started an alternative to health insurance, which was, you know, a goal of like really seeing like, could you start something where people could just like almost completely opt out of the system and opt into a different system where this kind of care was the standard of care and everyone had access to this as the sort of first line of care. And if anything tragic happened to you, like if you had any sort of accident or complex diagnosis, there was money to pay for that. But ultimately you weren't feeding the beast that has, you know, that has sort of led one way or another to these horrific health outcomes that we experience in America and many other countries that have industrialized. And then this, you know, and then 3 years ago, I really started to realize, like, look, we need to get this kind of care to everyone. And so that's when I started to really focus on what models of care could deliver functional medicine to a much broader population, and particularly on, you know, get paid by the systems that pay for healthcare right now, like in America, government insurance like Medicare and Medicaid, and then commercial insurance, which 90% or let's say 75% of Americans have access to either one of those two things. And so that's really what I've been focusing on for the last 3 years.
Yeah. And I you know, I find it really frustrating. For example, private healthcare insurance in SA, which I'm sure you know very well about, is they make the noises that, you know, you're going to get points and you're going to get discounts if you engage in preventative behavior. They'll pay for the GP to prescribe the medicine and the medicine's covered. They'll give you points for doing your 10,000 steps or your membership, but it's not really making a difference. And we all know this. It must be extremely frustrating for you. It's very frustrating for me, but I think we've still got a way to go as far as this is concerned.
It's actually not frustrating for me. You know, I'm not a health professional that put a lot of money into getting a certain certification only to be kind of blocked from, you know, their work by government institutions. I'm a guy that is trying to like solve the problem, giving all the factors that actually exist in front of me. And so like I hear you and I understand the frustration on your part, because ultimately I really get it. I honestly think that South African insurance, because my dad has it, right? He lives in Cape Town. And, you know, I think South African insurance is, you know, conceptually more aligned or more aligned than American insurance, because at least they understand, or like they have incentives for people to be healthy, which they do not have in America.
Wow. Okay.
And part of the back end of that is in America, you have like real perverse incentives that sit behind the whole medical system, where actually everyone is incentivized for costs to get up and to go up and people to get more unhealthy.
Wow.
So that's just sort of what sits in the background. Whereas at least in South Africa, like the insurance company does benefit to some degree if you stay healthy. Mm. And so, you know, so that the incentives are delivered appropriately. Yeah, look, I get it. And I understand that it's frustrating in that position. But like, I guess what I spent the last 3 years doing, and now where I feel I am today, which I can share, is super exciting, is that we have developed a way for essentially a doctor to prescribe an episode of functional medicine care for, you know, our team of health coaches to help patients execute that episode of care, which is basically all built around the fundamentals of health creation, right? Not the precision medicine end of natural medicine, but the sort of lifestyle medicine end of natural medicine, which is critical, and getting insurance to pay for it.
Wow.
And that's because I just took a step back and was like, okay, this is the state of the game. This is the state of how insurance pays for things. Things are changing in that world too. And COVID changed a lot, especially with regard to how telemedicine is paid for in the US, and how it's sort of equivalent to in-person payments now. And that created an opportunity to create a virtual delivery system for this kind of care. And that can complement either a precision medicine, functional medicine provider, which could be a clinical nutritionist or a doctor or a nurse practitioner. But then it could also complement, you know, conventional medicine, because the conventional medicine doctors know their patients aren't doing the healthy behaviors. They know their patients are lonely. They know their patients would do a lot better if they were eating better and sleeping better and exercising better and taking care of their stress and, you know, having meaningful relationships in their life.
Yeah.
But they didn't have something that was like super easy to prescribe.
Yeah.
And that once it was prescribed, you know, had a whole infrastructure to support the execution. And so we just created that. And so now, you know, we are signing, in some cases, functional medicine clinics that take insurance and delivering the service in partnership with those functional medicine physicians. More excitingly for me is, you know, actually now partnering with allopathic doctors who have never taken any training in any holistic medicine, but like see the need for their patients and see that this is actually profitable to deliver and more profitable than prescribing drugs. And then even more exciting than that is sort of like population health level contracts where, you know, people in the industry know that if you, you know, eat an anti-inflammatory diet, it could be effective in behavioral health or cardiology or rheumatology or any of these different areas. And they have these big groups of patients and they're actually now being incentivized to reduce the cost of care and see that groups is a really like elegant way to do that, especially groups that are, you know, that are, you know, learning to implement healthy behaviors together. So, you know, I understand the frustration from providers in the space, but because I'm not that, yes. I just, you know, try and like come up with solutions that fit the problem of the day.
Then we flash forward to 2020 and all of these issues get forced through the eye of the needle. And suddenly the providers are paying for telemedicine because they have no other option. And people are discovering the benefits of vitamin D3 and zinc and preventive medicine. And everybody on the planet understands now what a comorbidity is. It's almost surreal to see what's happened in a concentrated period of time. It almost sometimes feels to me like we have begged for this opportunity on many levels. As a human race, we've been all been saying this craziness has to stop. Something has to stop. The bus has to stop. And it did. We've been asking for everything to stop and it stopped. And from a medicine point of view, it has, in my opinion, at least, made patients, it scared them into asking the right questions. It scared a lot of people into action. It's frightened a lot of doctors into having to think outside of their business model as it was. And so what is your take on the future of where we're going because of what's happened in the, well, how do we use this as an opportunity?
Well, look, I think it's there for everyone to use it as a huge opportunity, a huge shakeup. You know, when chaos comes around, then there's an opportunity for, you know, people who can take advantage of it. And like, yeah, like you said, there's a really exciting opportunity in that the whole world just got an education in, you know, in, well, they should have got an education. It could, you know, that in, you know, sort of like the acute effects of chronic conditions, right? So, you know, it was quite easy to sort of like disregard your pre-diabetes or your pre-heart disease or your pre-autoimmune disease because, you know, it didn't really affect you that much day to day. But now, you know, if you have a much higher chance of succumbing to viral illness, then, you know, maybe there's a new level of urgency to start to implement healthy behavior. So I think that's exciting. You know, I want to share something that I've just been thinking about in the last few weeks. And I don't know the South African equivalent of this, but, you know, most people I think are familiar with the UK. I want to give the UK as an example. I really feel like the UK missed an incredible opportunity for real systemic transformation. And here's why I think the UK specifically, as opposed to America or South Africa. So in the UK, you have one, a national health service that people care about, right? They want it to succeed and they're willing to do things in order for it to succeed. Like everyone stayed home and the messaging was save the NHS, stay home. And people by and large did. They did what they were told because they want to keep the NHS because it's amazing to have like a high standard of accessible healthcare for free, essentially, or, you know, for just, you know, for the taxes that you get. So there's one, there exists something like health, you know, the average person cares about the medical system not failing, right? Which I'm not sure if you have anywhere else. So that's one. Two, you have this sort of like World War II energy that came in the UK where it was like, we're all pulling together and we're all clapping the doctors as they go off to work. Right. So that was an exciting, that's another foundational thing where like the whole country was like energized to do something together. Three, you have the BBC. And in the UK, the BBC, this national television and radio network, has an opportunity to get to almost everyone because people have to pay, you know, their annual subscription to the BBC. And so everyone gets BBC One, BBC Two, and all the radio stations and all that. So you have like large-scale delivery of information. Then four, you have someone in the UK who has the credibility and platform to be able to, and ability to masterfully create both video and audio content. And that's Dr. Rangan Chatterjee, who, you know, has credibility. Like in 2015 and 17, he had a TV show that got to more than 5 million people where he showed functional medicine-ish, you know, reversing chronic diseases very clearly in his show, Doctor in the House.
Yes.
He now has the most popular podcast in the UK. He just signed this week with Amazon to do these 5-minute daily podcasts.
Yeah.
He has a Radio 2 show on a Sunday night. He already has a Radio 2 show. So this guy is like everywhere.
Yes.
Now, if only they had taken a step and said, okay, look at all these things we have going for us. We are going to start a nationwide health campaign. And, you know, it's going to start with this content that's beamed to you every day through your, BBC. And we're going to create structures for people to, you know, help each other and support each other in doing healthy behaviors. But at least to start with like a daily pulse of like, this is how you can reduce your COVID risk. This is how you can build, you know, healthy immunity. Like that, imagine if that had happened, right? Then you have every other country being like, well, look what they're doing in the UK. You know, instead, what you have is, you know, the UK, you know, trying to do the Sweden herd immunity thing for like a week, you know, Boris getting COVID, panicking, shutting the whole country down, and, you know, not really talking about the fact that like why his health outcomes were so terrible was because of his own health, and just missing the whole opportunity to sort of provide some leadership, having the structure that you have for the rest of the world. And it could have been amazing, and it's not. And it really missed an amazing opportunity there. And I think that every country, to a certain degree, missed that opportunity as well. But the UK just had like so many factors going in. So, you know, to me, that was a really sad thing that happened. And it's a bit late now to jump on it. But ultimately, you know, that could have been a game changer. And, you know, I'm sad to hear it. If I was the health minister in the UK at that time, that's what I would have done.
Yes, it is. It is a missed opportunity. You know, you only know this looking backward, but who knows what the world's going to throw at us going forward. So those who can feel the ground rumbling, I think we need to get our asses into gear and see this as an opportunity coming, because I don't think this is the end of it. I think this is just the beginning of some really good opportunities to save lives, to help people think differently, to really, the time is now for change. And I think you understand this. I get it. So many other people do. And I think the world's ready for this now. So we have no excuse. We've got to keep doing what we do. So if there are doctors, and there are many practitioners listening to the show who are thinking to themselves, I really need to look into this. I know you're based in the States, but this is very much accessible to anybody in the world who really wants to get to change their practice or to think about patient care differently. How do they connect with you? How do they get to understand the mechanics of changing their practice?
Yeah, so one exciting thing that I can announce, and it's good timing, is that, you know, the thing that I'm most proud of in the practitioner space is through the Functional Forum in 2016, at one point we had 400 practitioner communities. So we had, you know, 400 places around the world where practitioners were getting together to watch the monthly show, and we're relaunching that infrastructure with a much better like system, business model, sustainability. Like the first time around, I had 4 employees, and it was exciting because it just blew up, but we just didn't really have the infrastructure to support it. So that's coming. So, you know, getting together once a month, once a quarter in your local town to, you know, connect with other practitioners, I think is going to be a critical part of speeding the revolution, you know, no matter what you decide, no matter how you choose to participate as a provider. I think second, you know, if you're on the journey to try and work out your own practice success and, you know, try and get to a point where you can build a financially sustainable and successful model and it has the foundation for whatever your vision is, you know, that's why we built the Practice Accelerator. And we've had, you know, some practices from South Africa go through that. And that's like your journey towards being a health entrepreneur that starts with building a successful, sustainable practice and then can take you wherever you want to go. And then, you know, if you're interested in group medicine, you know, I'd love to, you know, just put that out there, because that's what I've come to realize is this, is that there's a couple of significant flaws. The biggest flaw in the natural medicine movement is that the only patients that like the question that I want every practitioner who's listening to this to ask themselves, and that I want you to wrestle with as you listen to this, is if a patient comes to you and you work with them for, let's say, an episode of care around whatever issue they have. So you work with them for, say, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months. What does that person's health look like in 5 years? Has their time with you changed the trajectory of their health for a lifetime? Because if not, like, I really want everyone to just be like, that's got to be the standard that we hold ourselves to. Because if we're not doing that, we're almost just like, you know, a poor man's version of allopathic medicine. We're doing the same thinking, but just with inferior tools in a certain way. Not, you know what I mean, right? It's just like, it's not quite the same. So, you know, so I think there's the opportunity in all of our practices to, through education, through empowerment, and through like activating people to actually do the changes, I think there's an opportunity to radically change people's lives. And I'm sure all of you can think back to at least a few patients that you have had that happen to. But I would imagine if you're listening to this, that's not the norm. And I would tell you that the reason why that's not the norm is because different patients have different personality types that predispose them to actually like taking information and running with it and just like implementing everything you say. And most people don't do that. Most people, you know, need the supportive community of other people around them who are also doing it. And I've said for years throughout the Functional Forum, like the most healthy thing that you can do is introduce patients who want to get healthy to each other, because then they will co-shoulder the burden of, you know, of working, of supporting each other to actually make healthy behaviors. And that's what we need to do. So, you know, we have a structure now in America with Heal Community to do that. Ultimately, like that can be happening in each of your practices. And it's really about creating the right containers. And so I want to give everyone access. I'll give you a free download of my book. The second book was called The Community Cure. And if you go to thecommunitycure.com/audiobook, you can download that for free. If your ears have more free time than your eyes like me, you can listen to it in the car or yes, you can listen to it at home. But that book was really there to give any practitioner the sort of mental and structural framework to start to think about how to introduce patients who want to get healthy to each other and why that should be a critical element of practice. And that if you do that successfully, your chances of having successful outcomes and having patients, you know, really be healthier 5 years down the road goes up dramatically.
One of Jeff Bland's questions, in fact, the defining moment for me when he came out here and he said, he stood up and he said, how big is your classroom? And I got tearful. I was like, That's the whole point, is how big is your classroom? How do you reach people for free? But how do you reach these people where it really matters? And this is what it's all about. So much strength to you in what you're doing. And we've got to change the way the world works, because it hasn't worked very well up until now.
No.
I'm sure there's going to be tons of people who want to get in contact, find out more, whether it be naturopaths, nutritionists, GPs, and find out how they can transform their practices and get in touch with you. So what is the best way for anybody to contact you? Is by your website?
Yeah, the best way is through the website.
So we'll add all of those connections in the show notes. And then, yes, anyone who feels compelled to ask more questions, which is exactly what the point of this podcast is, can go ahead and start getting themselves involved in something bigger. Thank you so much for that.
Great to be in touch.
Thank you once again for joining me for another episode of the Reinvent Health Podcast. As usual, all of my guests' details can be found in the show notes page on Apple Podcast, Anchor, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts. Please don't forget to rate on Apple and leave a review.